welcome to the Headache Doctor podcast. We're on this podcast. It's our mission to educate and empower everyone with headaches and migraines so you can break free from a life of fear of your next headache or migraine and dependence on medication. On today's podcast, I have Dr. Jacob Zitterkoff. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Hey, thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, and I'm excited because we get to talk about airway, and you're the first orthodontist we've had on the podcast.
Awesome.
And so first off, I want you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, and how you got into this.
Yeah, amazing. So like you said, Dr. Jacob Zitterkoff, I was originally born and raised in Colorado, moved to Nebraska for high school, did college and dental school in Nebraska, and then ventured on out to San Francisco, California for orthodontic residency. And I mentioned that because, as a lot of people know, the coasts are often known as a little bit more progressive, people that are less afraid to push the envelope. So I was really thrilled to be a part of this orthodontic resident at University of the Pacific in San Francisco, where I was with a lot of colleagues that really pushed the tradition of orthodontics and was not afraid to do things different than has been done forever.
Yeah. Give us just a snapshot of what that means, if it's able to be done in a snapshot, meaning what's the traditional orthodontia, and then what were some of the things that were different in your education?
Yeah, for sure. So our chairman, I give him all the credit, Dr. Robert Boyd. He's the one that really brought in different specialists, other orthodontists, other specialists in other fields from all over the world, really. And so traditional orthodontics is often looked at is how do we make the person look better? How do we make them look prettier? Oftentimes it involved obviously putting braces on all the upper and lower teeth, and oftentimes extracting two teeth on top, two teeth on bottom, round the teeth out, and have a perfect smile that sits very nicely on a desktop.
Okay. So you're saying it was sort of a break away from the cosmetic aesthetic and like, let's actually look at health. Is that fair to say? Like, how do we improve people's health through orthodontics?
Absolutely. So it was more of an introduction to orthodontics as, yeah, we have one side, which is aesthetics, but we also have this huge side to orthodontics. Mm-hmm. That's the functional approach, where we take a step back, realize that there's a person here, right? And we're straightening teeth inside of a mouth that's a part of a whole other thing here. We've got a body and a head behind this smile.
Yeah. And you're in Colorado Springs.
Yep.
How did you wind up here?
So I wanted to move home, move back closer to family. So for the last 5 years, I was practicing up around the Denver metro area from mm-hmm. Colorado Springs all the way up north to Fort Collins. An opportunity came up about a year ago, a little over a year ago, actually. Dr. Matt Gaworski, a very well-known, prominent orthodontist here in Colorado Springs, has done international lecturing all over the world, really. And I mention this because not a lot of orthodontists are really thinking about airway, thinking about the entire body. And when I met Dr. Gaworski and realized, you know what, we have a lot of synergy here. There might be something here. And as we started talking more and more, we realized, like, you know what, this could be a great opportunity for us to collaborate, work together. And now Dr. Gaworski has a couple of feet out the door. He's looking at retirement, and I'm jumping in full speed.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. I of course, this is a podcast for people that are struggling to find solutions for headaches and migraines. We've talked about airway on this podcast several times. But give us if you have someone come through your doors and, well, first off, do people come to you and say, hey, I want you to help me with my headaches or migraines? Or is there sort of like you have to tie some things together or connect some dots for them?
I think in large part, the majority of our patients are coming in and unaware that really the orthodontist can do anything that could really help
sure.
the symptoms that they're experiencing. But I should mention that we have a very diverse patient base here. In our clinics, it's a lot of traditional orthodontists are full of 10, 11, 12, 13 year olds. We have at our one practice here in Colorado Springs, we see a good 50% adult patients. So it's fascinating to be able to see adults come in, and we see them at 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. and we take a step back, see what symptoms they're experiencing, and then also have the ability to tie with what we're seeing in these adults with what some of the symptoms the kids are experiencing and kind of predict how some of these kids are going to grow and develop if things are not taken care of at the young age.
Yeah, that is an interesting perspective that you get to have. That's probably, yeah, that's unique as far as the orthodontic world. Okay, so in your adult patients, are they largely coming to you because they say, hey, my teeth are crooked, or is there a sense of, I understand that my health's impacted or my airway's impacted or I can't breathe properly. How are those patients finding you?
Yeah, so I think it's twofold. We do have a large percentage of patients that are finding us on Google. Our website is very airway friendly, realizing that the movements, the treatments that we are doing are airway friendly, right? They're pushing us into the right direction. But we do also have an awesome large referral base that is aware that Dr. Gorski and myself are treating people with the airway in mind. And in essentially sending us patients that they feel are having some of these symptoms due to underlying airway issues that are ultimately resulting in a lot of the headaches and different types of pain that probably a lot of the patients that you experience as well.
Yeah. So we've had, you're our first orthodontist on the podcast, but we've talked about airway. Okay. So talk to us about what specifically an orthodontist in your training brings to the table when it comes to airway. Because I know it's a lot.
Yep.
And your expertise is really catered to this, but explain that for our listeners.
Yeah, so that is it's a very loaded question. I think that the best place to begin is probably what you guys have discussed on the podcast many times. But when we go to sleep at nighttime, right, we need to get ideal oxygen to the brain. And how it works, obviously, we want to be a nose breather. And so assuming that we are breathing through our nose, right, lips together, tongue at the roof of the mouth, breathing through our nose, right, let's assume the patient's mouth is closed. We need to get air in through our nares, right, our nostrils. They need to get the air, oxygen will then go up through, needs to get past the turbinate tissue. Oftentimes people have deviated septum. That can be one of our flow limitations, but then it gets back. It has to get past adenoids, get past tonsils, get down into the pharyngeal airway before it gets down to the lungs and goes up to the brain at nighttime. So when patients come into our clinic, one of the first things that we'll do is take a series of photographs. We'll take a series of scans. One of the scans we take is a three-dimensional CBCT x-ray. And which, as you know, it's a series of many different images that are compiled together. It makes a 3D volume. And we can use this, obviously, to look at the teeth, the relationship to the bone, the jaw bones that the teeth actually live in to the cranial base. But then also a huge one is obviously look at the airway. And compare the size of the airway, the volumetric analysis of the airway, the cross-sectional volume of the airway, and after doing this for many years now with hundreds and hundreds of patients, we've been able to notice a lot of different trends. And as you're also aware, that the amount of orthodontic literature that's been published in the last few years regarding airway has just really, really boomed.
Yeah, that's amazing. So connect airway, which I have a lot more questions based on what you said and diving into that. But before we get into the nitty gritty, why don't you just connect airway issues with things like headaches and what sort of symptoms are patients presenting with when they have these airway problems?
For sure. So it's kind of twofold. We have a group of patients that the joints are not in the right spot. And then we have another group of patients where it's more airway involved. So I'll do it like this. The first set of patients, right, for us to have like our homeostasis, for us to have an ideal comfortable bite, it's kind of like a three-legged stool. We need to have left jaw joint, temporomandibular joint in the right spot, right joint in the right spot. Those are two legs of our stool. The third one is we need to have our front teeth. We need to have this thing called anterior coupling. So when we bite our teeth together, we need both joints in the right spot, our front teeth to come together at an angle such where the back teeth are not just banging into each other. When the lower teeth come forward, when we protrude our lower jaw or mandible, we need to have what we call posterior disclusion. We want our back teeth to come apart. What that does is moves the lower front teeth forward, opens up the back teeth, the joint jaw joints move, but it's all a part of this protected occlusion that we have in dentistry. When patients don't have one of those three things, one of our three legs on the stool, we oftentimes will see them come in with headaches, crazy joint pain. Why? Because, I mean, it's multifactorial, but oftentimes these patients are experiencing myofascial pain, right? Muscular pain in origin, and the muscles are firing to put the teeth and the joints into the right spot.
Right, right. Yeah, so essentially, the anatomy doesn't allow for what should be functioning well, and so their compensation leads to stress, tension, irritation within the joint, things like that.
Absolutely. So that's one of our first groups of patients, but absolutely. And as you're very well aware from being involved in this space, patients will, when they are not having that homeostasis, when they're experiencing some type of pain, when their joints are not in the right spot, when the teeth are not in the right spot, the body will compensate because it's amazing. And one of the compensations that the body will do is start making them hold their head differently. And this is funny because when I was going through training, especially like in dental school, when I even first started learning about this, I thought it was voodoo. I'm like, there is no way that people are going to hold their head differently due to the way that their teeth are coming together or their joints are being positioned.
Yeah, we see that all the time.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Talk about head tilts and
It's absolutely fascinating to see. So that's the first group of patients.
Okay.
And then the second group is really more of that we see that are experiencing headaches is more of the airway part.
Okay.
And it's interesting because one of the things that we do, and I learned to start doing this in my residency program was an airway questionnaire. I finished residency in 2017, and before then it was really very uncommon for dentists and orthodontists to even be asking airway questionnaires. So in our airway questionnaire that we have on the website, we ask every patient first thing, on a scale of 0 to 10, how do you rate your quality of sleep?
Gotcha.
And so oftentimes we'll see people 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a huge red flag, right? And then they go into answering the other questions. And are you snoring at nighttime? Do you experience daytime sleepiness? Do you have headaches? Is your mouth open when you're sleeping at nighttime? Are you drooling? Is your pillow wet? Are you sleep talking, sleepwalking? A whole plethora of different symptoms. And when people start marking yes on a bunch of these things, it is like a big red flag that we could indeed have an underlying airway issue here.
Okay, so I started to think we have not on this podcast, we haven't talked too much about occlusion, how the teeth should contact each other, and the impact of that on the jaw joint and then headaches and migraines. So I want to start there and then we'll go down the airway route as well.
Okay.
So what, first off, sort of describe a scenario of like what someone's experiencing, and then they come to you and what's your process look like? You mentioned the cone beam CT, but as far as like moving their teeth, what does that whole process look like? That way people understand. Cause one thing I'm thinking that people are hearing your talk and they're like, well, I've had braces.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, is this just having braces or is there something more than that? And I'm actually kind of curious too, cause, I know there's more than that. But help us understand, like, are there interventions specific to the person that has a jaw pain issue that like their orthodontia process looks different or help us out there.
Great question. So I one of the ways that we can look at orthodontics, right, is some orthodontists are straightening teeth, right? They're making everybody look more beautiful. There's another group of orthodontists that are kind of taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture. So we're looking at the jaw relationship. So the maxilla, the upper jaw to the mandible, the lower jaw, where those are in regard to cranial base. So is the maxilla set too far forward? Is it set too far back? Is the mandible too far forward? Is it set too far back? And then obviously, are the joints in the right place? Are they seated? Are the TMJs seated and giving us an accurate depiction of where the jaws actually are? Then we have a dental diagnosis. So you have the skeletal diagnosis and then you have the dental diagnosis. Where are the teeth when the jaw joints are in the right spot?
Okay.
Oftentimes, for an ideal bite, we want all the upper teeth biting on the outside of the lower teeth. And we want, when we look at the teeth from the side, we want it to look like a zipper with no spaces.
Okay.
Oftentimes, a lot of these patients that are coming in symptomatic, their jaw relationships are a little bit off, or sometimes a lot of it off, such that the upper jawbone is too far forward, or the lower jawbone is too far forward, or a combination of the two. So that's when the muscles will come into play, fire to get the teeth to line up, so that way we can chew our food. And then that's when we start seeing a bunch of these symptoms.
Okay. So it sounds like the teeth want to contact each other appropriately.
For sure.
Yeah. So when we're chewing food, when we're breaking the food down, our teeth kind of know where they should be.
Yep.
But there's the structural component that if it's off, if the maxilla is too far forward, the mandible is too far forward, or combination, that's where we see those compensations and the stress builds up. Okay. So how does someone get to the point of, like, is there something developmentally that we're looking for? Like, how does someone get to the structural side being off? Is that just like genetics, anatomy? What's going on there?
Fabulous question. So oftentimes what we see here is maxillas that are too narrow.
Okay.
It's interesting because the upper jaw, the maxilla, grows in three planes of space like a balloon. So oftentimes when the upper jaw is too narrow, it's also too short front to back and too short vertically.
Okay.
Like you already said, right? The teeth will then move to compensate. That way little Johnny can chew his food.
Right.
But the second that we come in here and make this diagnosis of what is actually going on, that's when we can determine what are we going to be able to do. Oftentimes when we come in here, make the upper jaw bigger, right? It's creating more volume for us to be able to move our tongue more forward. The question though that a lot of people say is, why is my upper jaw too small to begin with?
Yeah.
And I can give you a few reasons for it. The first one obviously is genetics. So we could blame mom and dad.
Okay.
The other factors are epigenetic or other than genetic. And those factors are, and I mentioned this a little bit ago, but for us to have an ideally sized upper jaw, we need three things: lips together, tongue at the roof of the mouth, and breathing through our nose. What that means is so many patients that come in that have a tongue tie, right? They're not able to get their tongue to the roof of the mouth. And this is from when Sally is a day old, going through growth and development. We need the tongue to have the freedom to be able to get to the roof of the mouth. And then we also need to have lips together. We need to be a nose breather, not a mouth breather.
Okay. Yeah. So the tongue resting on the roof of the mouth helps with development then?
Yes.
Okay. And then if we're mouth breathing, obviously we can breathe through our mouth, but it's a compensation. So we're just not training ourselves to do it properly. And then there's sort of maladaptive changes. We see these structural changes. And is this like, is there like an age where it's crucial to get this right? And then once you cross that age, it's like, you know, everything's fused. It's not moving anymore.
Yeah, that's also a very good question. So that's why we will actually see people as young. I mean, I think I've done maxillary expansion and as young as a four-year-old because they're experiencing a lot of these symptoms. We, in an ideal, perfect world, we want to see these people when they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 before these sutures start to seal, right, and become like concrete. So that way we can more predictably move some of these people into the right direction before sutures really, really become hard and at that point in after 16, 17, 18 and beyond, it's most likely going to require a surgical intervention to be able to get movement of the bones into the right spot.
Okay. And then that is also impacting airway. So it's not necessarily just the teeth contacting each other, which would lead to the TMJ irritation that these patients may have, but it's also It's also airway, which impacts sleep. Is that correct?
That is 100% correct. So a lot of people think that this is our tongue, right? Mm-hmm. The tongue is actually 8 muscles that make up the entire floor of the mouth. So when we're going through growth and development and we have lips together, tongue at the roof of the mouth, and we're breathing through our nose, that tongue, those 8 muscles are pushing on the roof of the mouth, helping to guide ideal formation of the entire nasomaxillary complex. Mm. But also one of the questions that we often get asked is, okay, so here's my air. We're looking at a lateral cephalogram or the CBCT from the side. You can see cervical spine, which you deal with on a daily basis, right? You see cervical spine, you see pharyngeal airway, then you see the tongue volume. Mm-hmm. They often say, well, I've got a little tiny airway. How can I make this bigger? And we tell them, well, you know, you've got your cervical spine. We can't move your spine. That's not going anywhere. The only way to make this small pharyngeal airway space larger is to take these 8 muscles of the tongue, move them anteriorly. How are we going to be able to do that? Oftentimes, when we do things that put the skull bones, right, the foundation, the structure into the right spot, it's an airway-friendly move. It allows those 8 muscles of the tongue to move forward, and it literally opens up that pharyngeal airway. And I can't tell you how many patients come back and tell us they no longer snore. They no longer mouth breathe. A lot of headaches completely go away. We're no longer bedwetting. I forgot. That's a huge, huge, huge one for me. Last week I had a 13-and-a-half-year-old that's still wetting the bed. And no offense to physicians, but their family physician just like, oh, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Let's throw a pill at it. This is a huge red flag and there's something going on here.
Can you explain why that happens? why breathing or like limitations with mouth breathing, nose breathing, breathing leads to wetting the bed?
All of it. So that whole, I wish I could explain it, but okay. It's not totally known.
Gotcha.
One of my theories, I guess, would be right when we go to sleep at nighttime, we need to get into 2 stages of sleep. Mm-hmm. Deep sleep at the beginning of the night, which is where a lot of the growth hormone gets released. Mm-hmm. A lot of the physical repair happens. The second part of the night is primarily REM sleep. That's where a lot of the emotional repair happens. So we go to sleep at nighttime. We're not getting ideal oxygen to the brain, right? Brain thinks that we are choking, freaks out, and initiates fight or flight.
Yeah.
So you see the bear, you're going to go tackle the bear, or you're going to run away from it as fast as you can. So our adrenal glands start pumping out all this epinephrine like crazy. And it's like I like to tell patients, it's kind of like we just had a Red Bull at 10 or midnight and we're trying to go to sleep.
Right.
So a lot of people will immediately start tossing and turning, sweating profusely. A lot of people start clenching and grinding their teeth. That's another huge one. A lot of people that are clenching and grinding, oftentimes they're not getting good sleep at nighttime. Mm. We'll see. I saw a 5-year-old last week, his teeth worn completely down to the gingiva.
Yikes.
Do an analysis, get a sleep study. His adenoids are so huge. His tonsils are kissing tonsils, blocking the airway. But when we start all this tossing and turning and whatnot, what happens is it prevents us from getting into some of the deep sleep and or the REM sleep. And that's where a ton of these different symptoms happen. So that specifically bedwetting, a lot of people think that it is the person is just so tired from all of this epinephrine going around like crazy at nighttime. They're rolling constantly. They're not getting into the deep sleep and or the REM sleep. And so their body tries to wake them up. They're just so deprived of sleep. Their body tries to wake them up to go to the bathroom and then they just accidentally go.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah. Whether research shows it or not, I feel like that. Yeah. That checks out. It makes a lot of sense. That was very helpful. What do you think of night guards?
Night guards are fantastic.
Okay.
So when we routinely will present treatment plans to patients, give them their options, right? Give them 2-3 options. Oftentimes I will say, if you walk out of here and you say, you know what, none of these treatment options for me, at the very least, I recommend that you get a night guard to protect your teeth.
Yeah. Talk us through, the purpose, the function, what is a night guard doing, to help these people?
Yeah, great. So, one of the main things that it's doing, right, is And for the users, what is a night guard? A night guard is oftentimes an acrylic material. It's like a Invisalign retainer with that's oftentimes flat on the bottom surface. Mm-hmm. I like to think of it and explain it to patients. It kind of like creates an ice skating rink for the opposing arch to just kind of like skate freely. But oftentimes what we recommend patients to get it for is strictly to protect their enamel, right, from grinding away, especially if they are one of these underlying airway patients that are not getting good sleep at night. They're getting the release of all this epinephrine and they're just sitting there grinding all night long. And it's like I said, we've got patients that are 50, 60, 70, 80, and seeing patients come in that were never really knew that there could be a connection between orthodontics and airway and whatnot. So they never introduced this, and never really went for this. They'll have their enamel completely worn away.
Yikes. So, I'm sure a lot of listeners, I mean, orthodontics is, I mean, it's common, it's prevalent. So a lot of people have gone through it. And if they're listening to this and they're like, "Hey, I've gone through this process, or at least what I think is this process," or they're like, "Hey, maybe I need to get this evaluated again." What do you suggest as far as the type of provider they're looking for? Because clearly, you're doing something that most orthodontists aren't doing. So, is there a network or some way that they can sort of verify like this will be different? Or is there something in the process itself, like in the evaluation process, that they should be asking for to make sure that it's checked?
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, this whole airway conversation, like we've discussed, has become a lot more prevalent in the last few years. So I think that there's a greater chance now than ever before in history that their orthodontist is going to be more open to this conversation. I would recommend absolutely getting second and third opinions. I can't tell you how many patients come to us and we're the second or third or fourth opinion, and I applaud them for it. And if we're the first opinion, I encourage them, go get more opinions, just like I would for my family members.
Right.
So in addition to just going and getting second opinions, when you the listeners are at the orthodontic office, you're in the consultation room, I encourage you to ask questions about airway. Ask your orthodontist, did you take a three-dimensional scan, right? Can you see my airway? How do you think the treatment plan that you are presenting is going to affect the airway? Will it affect the airway? Will it not? If it will, is it going to be, is it an airway friendly move that we're going to be doing? Or, a big one is, are we going to be extracting upper and lower teeth? Are we going to make the shoebox smaller, right? Pull four teeth. That's a common treatment plan in orthodontics historically as well. For a lot of orthodontists would just, like we had talked about at the beginning, want to create straight teeth on a tabletop. So they'll pull four teeth, bring the teeth together. It makes the arches a lot more narrow. The way that we like to think of that is it makes the shoebox smaller, right? So if we have a size 10 tongue and a size 8 shoebox, the tongue is going to be too big. It's going to be forced into this small space. Remember that pharyngeal airway where we have our cervical vertebrae, the tongue is going to get squished and those 8 muscles are going to get pushed back. Oftentimes it can make that pharyngeal airway a lot smaller.
Okay. So that was insightful because, everything you said has been insightful, but the reason I'm like, oh, okay, light bulb, you're saying that like cosmetically, like you could just extract teeth, pull everything back and it all lines up. But you're saying this is different because we're looking at the shoebox and we're trying to expand that, which historically has been a little, like that's a little bit different than how orthodontists have thought. Is that correct?
For sure. Okay. And I'm absolutely not saying that any orthodontist that pulls teeth is doing something wrong, because as an orthodontist, I sometimes have to get premolars removed. Gotcha. I'm just saying that I would encourage the listeners, you know what, ask your orthodontist, how do you think this is going to impact the airway? One of the things that we're often looking for when we do our three-dimensional analysis is the intermolar relationships. So we zoom into the middle of the scan, look at our first molar widths, and I like to see that 40 to 42 millimeters from first molar to first molar. Oftentimes it's a lot smaller, which is a way that we can indicate that we have a small or a narrow maxilla. One of the things that a lot of our clinics are really, really well known for here in Colorado Springs and out in Falcon is that we, Dr. Goriski and myself, use what's called a maxillary skeletal expander. Not a ton of orthodontists use them. They're pretty new. What it is it's kind of like it's the rapid palatal expander that a lot of people get when they're young, right? Mm-hmm. When the bones are super mobile and we can predictably separate that maxillary suture in the roof of the mouth. Okay. What the maxillary skeletal expander is it's the same type of looking device, but it has four micro implants that go through the roof of the mouth and into the floor of the nose.
Okay.
What makes this special is that we can get maxillary true skeletal expansion, not just dental tipping to make our, remember we're looking for 40 to 42 millimeters in between the first molars.
Yeah, yeah.
If we take the regular RPE and put it in there, we're going to tip our molars and just tip them out and flare the teeth. Skeletons stay in the same size. If we take the maxillary skeletal expander, put it in, put our four microimplants in, start turning it, we can get 100% skeletal expansion, zero tipping of our molars. And what the cool thing here is that the roof of the mouth is the floor of the nose.
Mm-hmm.
So when we expand the roof of the mouth with skeletal expansion, we're also directly increasing the floor of the nose, right? The volume of the nasal cavity it's changing greatly, allowing the volume to be bigger. We're going to have less resistance. We're going to be able to get more air, oxygen through the nasal airway with less limitation.
This is in adult patients?
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's, yeah, I love that. Because, I mean, you said the limitation before is these sutures are fused, and so you want to get it before, but you're saying this device will allow us to impact that situation after.
Correct? Yeah, for sure. And up until the creation of this maxillary skeletal expander, or a lot of other providers will call it a MARPI, up until the creation of this, that maxillary suture could only be expanded in an adult patient by means of an oral and maxillofacial surgeon and actually getting jaw surgery, orthognathic jaw surgery, which sometimes our patients will end up getting regardless for other reasons.
Yeah.
But nowadays, to be able to do this, and we can do it predictably on women, we've done it up to an 80 years old.
Wow.
Males after about 40, it's kind of like rolling a dice. It's like a 50-50 success rate just because males' bone is way more dense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really changed the way that we as orthodontists can practice.
Wow. I love it. So as far as our listeners taking in this information, thinking about their own situation, their own symptoms, you know, how they sleep, what are some like things that you want your patients thinking about? Or let's say like someone's just on their own on this journey and you want to help them understand if they have this issue, what are some of the key signs or symptoms you'd look for?
Absolutely. So again, we want to be a nose breather,
mm-hmm.
right? All the published research, a very, very common, very popular book that a lot of people have read is called Breath.
Okay.
Right. We want to be a nose breather. The world's best athletes are nose breathers.
Yep.
So what I would encourage the listener to do if they're on their own is are you mouth breathing at nighttime? If you are, one, I would encourage you to want to figure out why, because it could be something bigger underlying. Mm. But one of the common things that a lot of patients like to use is mouth tape. Have you heard yeah. about mouth mm-hmm. tape?
Yep. Totally.
It can make you kind of feel claustrophobic the first time you do it, but it forces you to close your lips together at nighttime when you're sleeping, forces you to breathe air through the nose. Another thing that a lot of people like to do, and I do personally as well, is the nasal dilators.
Okay.
Because it when you... And this is kind of cool. People can do it at home. When they have, I would encourage them to tip their head back and inhale through their nose and see if the nostrils collapse at all when you are inhaling. One of mine does. So what I've found is that if I use one of these little nasal dilators, it holds it's like a cast and it holds your nostrils open at nighttime and it just allows nasal breathing to occur much easier.
Wow. That's amazing. You can just get those at like Walgreens, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Walgreens, Amazon. And wow. I do not have any financial interest. I wish I did.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. well, we'll wrap this up. This has been incredible, but any final thoughts or encouragements, anything that comes to mind, before we wrap up this podcast?
I would really encourage the listeners to ask questions. Okay. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And really surround yourself with a team of professionals that is looking at you from an entire holistic approach. Not just straightening your teeth on the top of a table, but really realizing that there's a person underneath all of this. There's an airway, there's a brain, right? We've got a whole bunch of muscles that are going to be compensating if not everything is working correctly. So surround yourself with, whether it needs to be pairing yourself with an orthodontist, a dentist, an ENT, pediatric sleep specialist, an oral and maxillofacial surgeon. Surround yourself with the team that can work together to help to make these decisions.
Totally. And then I'll give you the platform to promote your practice here in town and where you guys are located, that sort of thing.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. So we have two locations here in Colorado Springs. The first one is over on Powers in Dublin. Dr. Matt Gaworski, myself, and then the other location is out in Falcon, which is totally booming, or Peyton. Our second location is actually Falcon Orthodontics and Pediatric Dentistry, and it is in the Safeway Shopping Center.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, thank you, listeners, as always. If you find this helpful, we'd appreciate it. Write us a 5-star review. Share it with a friend. This is information that can have a dramatic impact on someone's life. And so you are our marketing. And so share this with whoever you think may find it helpful. As always, it's our mission on this podcast to educate and empower everyone with headaches and migraines so you can break free from a life of fear of your next headache or migraine and dependence on medication. Thanks for listening. Hey guys, I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening to the Headache Doctor podcast. I know that you have a lot of options in how you spend your time and how you consume information around headaches and migraines. I just wanted a quick ask, because the only way that we grow this podcast and continue this mission is if you subscribe, share this podcast, and of course, leave us a 5-star review. Those are cherished, and it makes my day when I see someone's story come through as a 5-star review and how this podcast has been able to help you. Thank you so much again for listening to the Headache Doctor podcast, and I'll see you next week.